Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to my home here in the most beautiful city in the country, Houston, Texas. It's just great to be here with you tonight. And thank you, Don, Doug, and TJ at the wonderful BBS radio station for allowing us to be on here and broadcasting literally around the world tonight to dozens and dozens and dozens of different countries and millions of people. So we're just excited about that tonight because we have a message tonight that's so many people need to hear. And it's absolutely not by coincidence. I believe it's God divinely appointed during Super Bowl, probably the highest percentage rate of sex trafficking is happening this weekend, especially in the city where the Super Bowl is happening. I haven't even watched any of it this year. I really don't care to watch it. And we're going to be talking about somebody that has dealt with that, lived that, and now helping people deal with that and hopefully stop it in our country in our own way. And so if you want to get involved, there's several different ways tonight to do that. You can call straight into the program tonight and talk straight to our guest at 888-627-6008. And TJ will just patch you right in. We don't ever screen our calls. We've never had, I don't believe, had to cut anybody off for doing anything that we didn't care to talk. They've always been respectful and professional. You come in and ask the question, have a comment, and we will be glad to answer those. Or you can give right on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. And it looks like we're live right here because I can see it right here. And we got several people on there. You can comment on that. Or better yet, not really better, if you want to just text me. My personal cell phone number, I'm so goofy, I tell this to everybody around the world, 832-396-6525. Wow. You can text it, and I will check it out during the commercial break at the bottom of the hour. And if there's something that you want to ask or a comment, I'll be glad to read that to our guest tonight. Tomorrow, I'm going to have an awesome day. I am traveling to Conroe, Texas, which I believe is about 45 minutes to an hour north of here on 45. And 45 is just right down the road here. The NRG Stadium is right behind me. Medical Center, Texas Medical Center is right there. Where I work is right about there at the Texas Children's Hospital and Baylor College of Medicine. But I'll be driving up to Conroe early in the morning. I have two sessions, one at 8:30 till 10 and one at 10 to 11:30, and going to be doing that 3 days straight, not straight, but three different days to train the entire Conroe Fire Department staff and workers and everybody that's involved in the fire department, because the state of Texas, which I believe is the best state in the country, requires now first responders and everybody that is a fireman, firewoman, to be able to keep your credentialing and your licensing and your ability to be able to do what you do, is you have to have mandatory training. And the state of Texas legislature has wrote that in and made that a law. And I'm on a couple of those Governor Abbott committees that I love being able to help with legislature and to get that done. So I'll be up there training tomorrow. I'll be done by noon, heading back, and it'll be online with some people to talk about some other things that we're going to be dealing with when I'm going to be training all the judges in Texas, which is wow. That's a hoot. If you haven't had a good time getting a room full of judges, that's really a lot. I didn't say that. And Thomas, please edit that out if you would. I'm teasing. But it's just great to have you all with us tonight. I want to let you know that if you want to get involved, go ahead and hop in. If you have somebody that you want to just listen to you, feel free anytime, 24/7. You can text that number or you can dial that number and I will respond to you 3 o'clock in the morning. And if you're absolutely need somebody and you email me or something, I'll respond 24/7 email to you. And I try to keep my response time to get back with you within 2 to 3 minutes, 24/7, unless I'm on the radio or doing presentations and I can't do that. So you always have somebody that wants to listen to you, that wants to try to help. Have the answers? No. I don't have all the answers, but I have 2 ears and 1 mouth, so I'll be glad to listen to you and hopefully more than what I speak. Because most of the time, the biggest present and the greatest present we can give somebody else is just giving them our presence. And I think just that undivided attention is so important. And I try to do that as a host too on this radio show. So why I do that, I'm just going to ask TJ to go ahead and bring in our beautiful guest tonight. Just her picture can be right here side by side with me. And what I'm going to do is while she's talking, I'm not going to be over here texting on my phone. I'm not going to be over here looking out the window and rubbernecking. I'm going to be giving her my undivided attention. Parents, write that down. That's what your kids are craving. They're wanting communication. They're wanting somebody to tap into. And they think Facebook, LinkedIn, all those other social media, that doesn't do it. The greatest communication tool is the one that's causing the most problem with our communication. It's this lousy phone. Turn it off, set it down, and just look into your kids' eyes and say, "Hey, how are you doing today? What's going on in your world? How can I help you?" It's great tonight to have with us. I am honored. And to be honest with you, I've been following her, watching her, finding out about her, and hearing some great things about her. And I reached out and she immediately responded. Anne Marie Hayden. She is a survivor leader. Does that mean that she's been attacked while she's leading and she's survived through that? No. It means that she has gone through something. And now, because of going through that, she has discovered what her purpose in life is for the rest of her life. And now she's a leader in that world that once, at one time, the devil probably said, "I got you. I got you. And nobody's going to want you when I'm done with you." But she has turned that around and put the devil back in hell where he belongs. And she is faith rooted, an advocate, and the founder, president, CEO, founder of Fireborn, FireBorne.org, a survivor-led movement that's focused on service, empowerment, and forward progress. I'll let her tell you the rest of her life and everything else that she does because I don't want to take any more time on the screen. But I want to welcome to the program tonight. It is my true honor, Anne Marie. Welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thanks, Dr. Williams. I'm doing wonderful. I'm truly honored and humbled to be here. There are so many amazing, victorious men and women out there. To be able to be here and share the victory that I can stand in today and that I look forward to tomorrow is truly remarkable.
I think one of the neat things about it when I was listening to and reading about you and getting on your webpage and finding out more is you're a pastor. You're a pastor of a church. And where is that church at?
Well, I've been a pastor, so and the Assembly in Broken Arrow. I pastored a group life and recovery and restoration. So that's here in Oklahoma. Oklahoma is home for me.
Sure.
And in one of the suburbs of Tulsa is called Broken Arrow. And
Absolutely.
that is truly the heart of where I live, is in Broken Arrow and in the church. But as we know, as you and I and many of us know, the church is not just four walls.
No.
The church of the people that make that up and walk that out. And so I'm truly honored to be able to be a disciple of Christ more than anything, and to share the good news of all that he has done for me and wants to do for others.
I tell you, I love Tulsa. Matter of fact, I'm on the board of directors of the Demand Project.
That's right.
They are just wonderful people up there. And I
Yes.
go up to Tulsa and in the Oklahoma area all the time. So I just maybe we'll get a chance to have coffee together one time.
I
So that'd
would
be
love
great.
that.
So
Yes.
somewhere in your life at an early age, and I would imagine maybe, and I'll let you just go in as we just pull back the sheets on this.
Yeah.
You was hurt, abused, probably, if I hear right and have learned right, from the earliest childhood memory, you was being abused in
Yeah.
an unbelievable world that some of us know nothing about. And I want to dig and drill deep into that too. But tell us about your childhood and how that developed you as we talk through the hour into the woman that you are. What happened to you as a child, Amory?
Well, and I'll push back against that. Some of us don't really understand it because I think more of us have experienced than are willing to admit it. And I'll certainly get to that part in my story. But I was born into a cycle of generational trauma. I was born into vulnerabilities that were easily exploited and hidden in plain sight and unseen by most that should have seen it and stepped into it. So I was actually born in a little town at the very bottom of Texas, born to a single mom. Mom who had experienced a lot of trauma herself, to parents who had also experienced a lot of trauma. And so brokenness was pretty normal, for my life, for my sister's life, for my cousin's life. It was a norm as far as I was concerned for everyone. So from there, began the journey that is, Anne Marie's story. So from that moment of being born into poverty and abuse and addiction, my mother, a single mom, trying to figure out how to get by in life. For her, she believed, and I don't think that the thought is that different these days. She believed that in order to survive, in order to have the life that she thought was the life, that she needed to have a man in her life. And in her mind, in that generation, and a lot in the current generation, certainly in my generation, she believed that in order to have a man, you had to meet the needs of that man. And those needs were sexual. And so mom was sexualized at a very young age. I was a victim of child abuse, sexual child abuse at a very young age. So when mom needed to start surviving, that survival came by way of providing a commodity, which was her body, and in turn ended up being my body as well.
You talk about generational trauma.
Yeah.
Did it go beyond from you back to your mom? And was it even more generations than that? Because I think the average right now is three generations before somebody like you breaks that cycle. Did it go back a couple more generations that besides just you and your mom that you know of?
I believe it did. Grandma, what I know about trauma now, and certainly from my own lived experience and seeing grandma and the way she behaved, knowing that grandma was a bride at a very, very young age, I believe that grandma also went through a lot of sexual trauma. I know she experienced a lot of abuse at the hands of my grandfather. And so I believe it went back even further than her. And so, like you said, we know that it goes back at least three generations.
Yeah.
And so I believe it went back to grandma and maybe even beyond grandma.
So if you're listening tonight and you've experienced something, you may want to look back and go, oh, maybe that's why things were the way they were at their house. And as you look back in those days. Now, in your earliest memory, you mentioned something that really perks my ears up, that from the earliest memory that you have as a child, you were being abused, correct?
Yes, my mother, she wasn't married to my father. She got married to my sister's father, and he was a part of a very sadistic family. That family was physical abuse and sexual abuse was very rampant, and they were part of a religious group that sexual abuse also led to some religiosity, some levels of achievement, and because of that, I began at a very young age experiencing sexual trauma, and even what we now know as a ritual sexual abuse.
The ritual religious society. You talking about the Freemasonry?
I am.
This is a secret order that. Do you think that is common in a lot of their societies, or was this just one particular one? Or do you think that that is commonplace over the years as you went through that? So you're abused by these men in their rituals, in their programs, and during their meetings?
Yes, I don't know how common it was. I only know what I know. And to be real honest, Dr. Williams, it's one of those areas that I've not dug into deeply. It was hidden for a long time. I knew I'd experienced sexual abuse at the hands of my father and my grandfather and my uncles, and not all my uncles, but some of my uncles and both of my grandfathers. And so I knew that I'd experienced sexual abuse at their hands. But then there were dark places that were hidden to me until later in my life, and things started to flash up and pieces started to come together. And through my healing and conversations with people, begin to put two and two together. And you realize that those rooms that you were taken to, the things that happened to me after the sexual abuse, I would be cut. And because of the being cut, and my blood being taken, there were situations where we now know that as ritualistic.
So you did, they did cutting and bleeding on you during part of their ritual acts. Now, were you alone as the victim, or was there other victims in that room with you, or was it always you're the only one at the time, and there may have been other people that you didn't know about that was in the room with you?
As far as I know, I was alone in those situations. This occurred when I was, younger than 7 years old. So those memories are really dark and hidden. Again, I get flashes of them, and in those flashes, I know that, there were multiple people. I know that, I know the sexual abuse that occurred, and I know the cutting that occurred, and the collecting of my blood that occurred from that cutting.
Where would they cut you at, Emery?
I get cuts on my arm and then on my leg. So in both places, I would be cut.
Okay. Now, was this an offer, a sacrifice of your stepfather to them as a member of this Freemasonry, or was it just something that?
I couldn't tell you. And again, it's one of those areas I've not dug into deeply. I don't know if it's something I'm just not ready to really fully understand, or if it's something that my spirit just wants to reject because of the pure evil that's involved in it. I know what I went through, and for me, that's enough. I know that it probably wasn't an isolated situation, one for not for me and not for others. And that's pretty dark. But that's not, unfortunately, that's not where it ended either. That's just the beginning of me being spent goods.
Yeah, and that happened from the earliest memory that you have to about 8 years old.
About 8 years old. 8 years old is when my mother finally left my stepfather and his family from Texas up to Oklahoma, which is where her family was living. So we moved up here and moved in with my grandparents.
Now,
And
did
that.
that moment right in time, Emery, if I'm gonna jump in real quick. Did that give you a pause of, oh, it's finally over, but basically it was just a turn of the page.
There was a moment, a really happy moment, and I don't know if it was, 3 months or 6 months, but there was a period of time there in between the then and the next that my mother was doing really well. She had found a job. I was in Girl Scouts. It just seemed like, I had toys. It just seemed this unimaginable, beautiful life. Until it wasn't. And I think that happened because mom began to experience a freedom that she hadn't had before. And with that freedom came a life that she had yet to experience because she had gotten married so young. So she started to go out to bars. She started to hang out with men. She started to drink and do other things that distracted her from being the mom, that I think she wanted to be. And we soon found ourselves losing our home and needing to move in with my grandparents. And that's when the next began.
And then eventually, that's when homelessness came. You're
So
living on the streets.
grandpa, yeah, my grandpa, my mother's father was an alcoholic. And he had also he was sexually abusing me. I think he was sexually abusing many in our family, including my mother. And it got to a point where I don't know if they kicked mom out or if mom left, but she took me and my sister. And at that point, we were homeless. We were either couch hopping or, finding groups of people to stay with in abandoned homes, trying to find a place that just had some shelter and some semblance of safety.
Okay, now in this, I'm sure you've had, because of the position you're in now and with this organization and the great work that you're doing, your sister, did you become her protector, her shield of trying to make sure she wasn't hurt, that she was always pushed to the side and you chose to say, hey, me, not her? How did that play out in that scenario?
Well, I certainly tried to be. My little sister was, my little sister, and so I did. I wanted to protect her, and mom wasn't in a place where she could protect her. So when we would be in abandoned homes or in wherever we might land for the night, I would try to tuck my sister away into a closet with a blanket, so that she would stay safe from the parties that was going on. I would try to stay in there myself with her, but at some point, my mom would begin to holler for Annie. And Annie was what I was called when I was a little girl. And I knew if I didn't leave that hiding place that they'd come and find me, and that they might find my sister too. So I certainly tried to protect my sister from all that was going on.
Now, in abandoned homes, and this is in Oklahoma.
Yes, in Oklahoma.
Okay. Now, I've lived in Southern Illinois where I grew up and then moved to Missouri. Oklahoma temperature during the winters gets pretty brutal.
Yeah, it does.
In abandoned homes, how did you stay even warm? How was your basic needs being met besides the sexual abuse? The neglect and things that had to just take a toll on you. Was you going to school?
I was going to school, not regularly, but I was, going whenever I could catch the bus, or we were close enough to walk. But there were times where we'd stay in abandoned homes out in the middle of a country, and it would certainly get very cold. They would start fires in buckets, and that would in inside of a home, it would warm it some. It would be better than being outside. So that's, we stayed warm that way. But I got to go to school, and for the most part, I stayed current with my schooling. I fell behind 1 year. I know at least there's 1 year that I fell behind and had to repeat a year because of absences, but we moved all the time.
Yeah, and obviously showering, hygiene, things of that order just couldn't be top-notch, correct? I mean, because of the environment you were in.
And that's one of the things that, I hope people see now is that, what they saw when they looked at me as a little girl was this dirty, stinky little girl, that probably wanted more attention than they were willing to give me, because I was so unkept, and was probably, a little more sexualized, than they were comfortable for, comfortable acknowledging. And so rather than engage in my life and in the life of my family, they would turn the other way.
Did your mom ever do that famous post-World War II generation of, hey, Annie, what happens in this house stays in this house, keep your mouth shut? Was it that kind of thing that you wouldn't dare, even though chances are in the environment that you were in, some people say, hey, I don't want to put my arm around this kid and say, hey, is everything going all right at the house? Because you may have not have shared it or not, or would you have? If anybody extended that olive branch.
Yeah, I don't know that I would have shared it. Certainly, there was that we protect our own mentality.
Yeah.
I didn't. I wouldn't have wanted anything negative to happen to my mom. I and to a degree, I don't even know how much I acknowledge what was happening to me was wrong, but instead normal.
Because you didn't know
Because
anything different.
I didn't know anything different. That's what I was made for. At least that's what it felt like.
That was your role in life,
It
was to
was.
satisfy the needs of other people.
Yep, so that we could survive.
The mentality and the mental health of your mother, was she verbally abusive, emotionally abusive, or was she a caring, loving mother as much as she could have been in the environment she must have gone through too?
Right. My mom loved me. She's always loved me, but she loved me the best she could.
Yeah.
She certainly was traumatized. She was struggling with some mental health, and substance abuse didn't help that situation. So she was absent from what I know her heart wanted more often than not.
Yeah.
But there were pockets of time, where, we got to go get an ice cream, and, I got to feel the love of my mother, and, or, it was a sunny day, and, we would run around the park. And it didn't matter that we didn't have somewhere to sleep at night, or we didn't know where our meal was going to come from next. We were in that moment, and it was happy moments.
Hey, well, we're going to take this first half hour just has flown by. We're going to take a short commercial break. On the other side of this, Anne-Marie, if I could, I want to talk about when your mom became the teacher, of how and why, and this is what you do, and then this new family that you had within the homeless community. And how that ended up playing out, and then how grace and mercy and deliverance was brought to you. And we want to get to the positive side of this on the last half of this next segment. But don't leave right now, because the second half of this is going to be awesome. And Marie Hayden, the founder of Fireborn, is going to tell the rest of her story on the other side of this commercial break. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Woo, doggies, I tell you what, we have an awesome guest tonight, Anne Marie Hayden. And I want to let people know that last week, our guest, that Jeffrey Epstein, minor number one in the federal indictment, was going to be with us last week when they delivered and released all those 300,000 pages. She immediately called and said, I cannot until I find out what these pages reveal. Before, because we would have been the next interview and she wanted to make sure she didn't say anything. We will have her back on and schedule her again when after everybody goes through these droves of paperwork for that Jeffrey Epstein victim. Anne Marie Hayden. Anne Marie, when you was experiencing this homelessness and you thought that maybe you were only good for what people could get from you as a child. But what does that do to you? I know what it done to me, but this isn't about me. This is about you tonight. What does that do to you as far as your self-esteem? How did you find satisfaction? Was it making your mom proud of you? Was it performing the acts so she could say, hey, good job? Because she ended up becoming a teacher saying, hey, this is how you want to satisfy a man. Am I wrong in that?
No, you're not wrong in that. As strange as it might seem, you know, my satisfaction came in knowing I was performing the way I was tasked to perform. Whether it was enjoyable or not, that was my identity. My identity was in my physicality, in what I could provide sexually. It warped what I thought love was. It warped what my identity was. And it warped what I believed was true. Because in those moments, I knew I didn't want what was happening to me. None of it was pleasurable. And as I would lay there as a little girl and those things happened to me, all I would know is that the other person, that man, that is what he wanted. And all I could focus on was that, because that's what kept me alive. That's what kept us going. That's what kept the roof over our head. That's what kept the food coming. That's what kept my mom okay. And so what I knew as my feelings and my truth, I had to dismiss, and I had to solely focus on making sure that the person that was receiving from me was satisfied, was getting what they wanted. And so that carried my whole life with me until I started receiving some healing.
Does it paint a brush across society of that's what everybody wanted from you, that it was hard to trust, it was hard to open your heart to somebody that may show some generosity or interest in who you really are, not what they could get from you? Did it destroy everything until, thank goodness, the grace and the love and the mercy and the forgiveness that I can keep on going of Jesus Christ into your life? But how does that, because it's so hard for me to trust today. Did you have that same problem?
Actually, the opposite. It made it really hard to trust myself.
Oh.
I believed whatever other people wanted was what was right. And I would perform for whomever was in front of me. I used to take pride in saying that I was a chameleon. And if I didn't know how to do something, I could figure it out really fast. And I was really good at figuring out what somebody wanted from me and performing for them within a moment. I couldn't trust myself. I had no idea who I was or what I wanted or what I liked or what was true to me. All I knew was what somebody else wanted that was in front of me. And how could I get that for them so that I would feel loved, so that I would feel worthy, so that I would feel valued?
So how long did it take for you to say, hey, wait, it's time to let this mask come completely off? Because me over 35 years, how long did it take for you to be who you really are, Amory?
Yeah, well, I guess I've got you beat because it took me over 40 years.
Got me beat. You
Before
get the
I
door prize.
started, woo! It took me more than 40 years to feel to figure out that that I had my own dreams, that I had my own ideas, that I was designed on purpose for a purpose, and that purpose didn't change with the wind. It didn't change with the person that was in front of me. Putting on mask over mask over mask was exhausting. And it certainly took me to a place where I didn't want to do it anymore. It was too much, and I just wanted to check out of this life.
Okay, so I want to get to the real good stuff about what you're doing now, but something happened during that stages that changed your life and brought all of this kind of to a abrupt halt, right? And when you were
Yes.
15.
Yeah, I was 15 and thought I was on my way to making big time money in pornography and ended up pregnant. And when I ended up pregnant, I was immediately met with options. The main option that they were giving me was abortion, because they had plans for me to go overseas and do some video and modeling in Asia. And I couldn't go if I was pregnant. And for me, I thought I had just ruined my shot at finally making the big money to buy my mom a house and buy my sister all the toys that she could want. I had slipped up and gotten pregnant. But also for me, I had learned the value of life just a few short months, maybe before that, in a classroom where we were talking about pro-life versus pro-choice. And for me, whether it be a moment of rebellion or a true moment of overcoming by the Holy Spirit, I fought in that class for pro-life when everyone else was fighting for pro-choice. And from that, a seed was left that when a seed was within me, that was a baby, I knew that I couldn't take that baby's life. I knew that I had to develop that life. And I didn't know if I was going to give that baby up for adoption, but I knew that I was going to give birth to that child. So I unfortunately, but fortunately for what we know now, did not get to go overseas and pursue those, big time modeling advances that they had for me. But I did get to give birth to a life that completely changed my life.
But do you believe now, after the fact, that that seed of life that was in your womb is the seed that kept you alive? Because if you would have went to Asia, you would be
Yeah.
somewhere buried out back behind someplace, and they
Yeah.
would used you, abused you, and thrown you away.
Yeah.
You would have never come back.
I was already being given so many drugs to do the videos and photography work that I was doing. I know that had I gone overseas and certainly knowing what we know now about some young men and women who do go to other countries than where they're from, there is no chance that I would be sitting before you today.
Yeah. And there's two words in the Bible that can change everything. And at least in my life, there's two little words that say, but God.
But
But
God.
God. Here you are,
Yes.
15, pregnant, being abused, but God. Now,
But
and
God.
tell me, but God did this for you and how that worked through your husband, through,
Yeah.
in the life you have now, what you're doing now, because this is such a unbelievable, horrific story. But
Yeah.
now the ashes have been
Yeah.
formed into beauty, to be
Thank
able to
you.
help other people. But God,
Yeah.
what?
I'm in awe of God and all he has done. So, yeah, I decided that not only was I going to not have an abortion, but I was going to be a mother. And I wanted to be a mother to that baby that I wanted. So at 15 years old, I decided to have, a baby, gave birth, just before my 16th birthday, and knew I needed to get a job. So shortly after that, I dropped out of school, got a job, and at that job is where I met my husband. He was, a few years older than me. Yeah, I think he was 22 when I was 16 years old. But God had plans, and we both came in with a lot of brokenness, and not really for the right reasons, but God knew. He knew exactly where he could take us. And so we went through every valley possible. We went through drug addictions, abuses, adultery, and at some point figured out that what we were doing to each other and to ourselves wasn't working, and we needed to do something else. And when that happened, that's when we finally laid it all down. We know that as our surrender time, and said, you know what? Maybe there's more. And we went to church, stepped in the church the first Sunday in 2018 together, not knowing how we would be received, knowing that we were, just out of our addictions, knowing that, just 6 months before that, we were doing things that no church person should be doing. But we were received by the love of God.
Received. How important was that to have
Oh.
that first interaction? But is that a make or break? Because as a
It
pastor
is.
too, is that a
Yeah.
make or break moment?
It is absolutely a make or break moment. And it's so one of the reasons that I'm committed to the work that I am now, because I know what the church, I know what my church and the people of my church did for my healing process. But I've also seen and heard stories that others have not received the same. And so I know how critical, had we not been received the way we were received when we walked in those doors, we probably would not have come back. And I know many people who are hesitant to go back and or step foot in the church for the first time in a long time. So being received, being seen, having the door open to being known without judgment, without condemnation. I recall several moments where, I would be sitting across the table from church people in a church class, and I would say something that wasn't very church-like, but was just met with such love and correction, but l in a loving way. There was time when I repeated the words I said to you earlier about being a chameleon, and I repeated it from a prideful place because I was good at that. And I was immediately met with, but we should not conform to this world, but be transformed by the word. And praise God, he was with me. And I received that rather than receiving it as condemnation. I received it as an epiphany, as a word from God of saying, yes, I have been conforming, and I don't like that. I don't want that. I want to know who I am, and I want to be known by others. And so it was so critical to be in a church surrounded by church people that truly were open to loving me, loving my husband, loving us right where we were, and walking it out with us, for whatever we needed to walk through next at our pace.
And this is right in the heart of the Bible Belt. And I'm sure,
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but that your husband didn't have a three-piece suit on and a tie. I would imagine there was tattoos that
No.
were being seen, that you didn't fit in
Yeah.
by the looks, but
Yeah.
that didn't affect the love and the acceptance. That is huge,
Right.
but not.
Yeah. It's huge. We were really rough around the edges, but we were eager. And I think that's if people are willing to see that, because it's really hard to walk into a church not being churched. And if we could just see that people are walking in, not looking on the outside, like they're beginning to look on the inside, and know that true transformation happens that way. It happens from the inside out. You know, my clothes are not the first thing that are going to change when I begin to see and walk with Jesus. It's my heart.
That is great. That's
And so
2018. And then
that's 2018.
when did you feel okay? There's two or three important days of your life. One is the day you're born. The
Yeah.
second is the day that you're born into Christ. And the third is
Yeah.
the day that you find out the reason you were born.
Right.
When did you discover that's the reason I exist now? Is what you're
Yeah.
doing right now. When did that all become a reality, and how the Holy Spirit bring that into your mind?
Well, I would certainly say my moment of salvation was a critical part of that, because knowing that I was loved, I specifically was loved so much that my heavenly Father would give his perfect son for me specifically. That kind of love is transforming in itself. But as I took that journey, that first year of full surrender and laying it all down, stupid words, wrong saying, wrong walking, but trying. God began to do some healing in me, and in that healing, some revealing. And I'm a servant. I've always been a servant. And so I wanted to serve in every capacity. I felt like a kid in a candy store. And a lot of churches might say that somebody that early on in their salvation, somebody that new out of their sinful life probably shouldn't serve. But that's not how I was met. Every door was open with some guardrails, praise God, so that my husband and I were leading groups. My husband and I were, a part of the serving team. And at one point, people would caution me, "You're doing too much." But I did. I felt like a kid in a candy store. I had no idea who I was or what I liked, whether it was lemon drops or chocolate bars, and I needed to try it all. And in trying it all, one of the things that I tried was an event that was being held to bring awareness to trafficking. I didn't know anything about trafficking. I assumed, like most, that trafficking was something that happened somewhere else, and I wanted to do missions at some point. So I wanted to learn about trafficking, and I went to this event and sat in the audience and learned as a speaker was talking about the different ways that someone can be trafficked. And a speaker began to talk about girls in pornography and how that's trafficking, and girls that are being exchanged for things of value by their parents or by the people in their lives that are supposed to keep them safe. And I sat there going, that can't be, because that's was my life. And I chose those things. I chose to be in videos. I chose to have photos taken of me. I chose to lay down and let those things happen to me. I wasn't a victim. I wasn't a survivor. Maybe I was. And so
And did
I
it hit
then
you? Wait, they're talking about me.
they were talking about me, and I rejected it. I rejected it, and people that spoke with me at that time, I was open and honest about it. I spoke with people at my church. I was like, "This is what they said, but that's not true." And they were loving with me. They didn't rebuke me for saying no. They didn't correct me. They let me process through it. So I did a lot more self-learning. I did some more online video education about trafficking, and soon began to realize that Well, the term victim is still one that I'm not real comfortable with. I was victimized. I
Yeah.
was a little girl, and I was given options that I should never have been given. I was made to do things because I wanted to survive, and I wanted my mom and my sister to be safe. And because of that, I know that I was victimized, and I was victimized by traffic. And my mom was one of them.
Now, as we only have a couple minutes left, tell me how Fireborn became a reality and what is it that you're doing with this organization and how people can get involved to help. Because I want to go ahead before we have to cut off. I want to go ahead and invite you back because we didn't even talk about you trying to commit suicide. We didn't talk about so many other things that you have just so many, it's like an onion. There's so many different layers there. When you go through all this, but now this is who you are. Fireborn is you. You're writing two books, right?
Yes, I am.
And
So
what's the two books
Fireborn
going to
is
be
me.
about?
I am Fireborn. The first book is going to be about my faith journey. It's less the nitty-gritty of the things that I've experienced, but those things will come up within the story. So the first book is The Reckoned Rising, and it's going to be my faith journey. It's going to be how when I walked in those doors of that church on that first Sunday in 2018, I was received, and how I began to, be transformed by the Holy Spirit. And how community was really critical in that walk, and continue to be, and are the basis for everything that I am and we are, and how change actually happens. So the reckoned rising, there's those that have been dismissed, rising up from those ashes and taking their rightful place, in the army of faithful servants. And then the second one is Fireborn. Fireborn, of course, is the place where I'm at now as a leader in this work. I need others with me. Community is so important, so it's finding other survivor siblings and linking arms with them, championing them and being championed by them. But it's also stepping out in our purpose. So Fireborn is Fireborn with an E because we carry the fire. What once tried to consume us, is now what carries us. So we know the fire is the Holy Spirit, and the fire of the Holy Spirit empowers us to do more than we could think and imagine. So within each of our purposes, so my purpose I know is to activate and mobilize the church. And that church is, again, is not just four walls. It's you and I and every faith leader out there who calls themselves faithful members of society. We know that there are people hurting, and it is our doctrine that says that we should walk it out with them.
Yeah, we should go
We
and
should
make
go.
disciples. Go and reach these
Yes.
folks, just like Jesus would have. We are the Jesuses.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're carrying Jesus with us.
Yeah,
And
that's
this problem is huge, right? In every
it's
community.
huge.
It is here in Houston, I'm sure, because I was from a little small town in Southern Illinois where it happened to me. But in Oklahoma, it's huge there. I mean, I know, right?
Dr. Williams, where vulnerabilities exist, trafficking exists, because
Yeah.
trafficking is the exploitation of vulnerabilities, and if we don't step up as a society, as a faith community, and say, I see you and I'm willing to walk this out with you, we're turning our heads and allowing the predators to take them instead.
We have to disrupt the demand of
That's
sex,
right.
and it
Yes,
has
we
to be
do.
at the core.
That sex is so perverted because it is a key part of what God created. God created sex, and too often we've left it to the world to define and to pervert, and that's where we've come, and that's where we are, and we have got to reclaim that. I am not ashamed to speak about sex in open environments because it is created by God, and it's a beautiful thing. And if we can't reclaim that as a church, then we are not going to get anywhere in this fight.
Yeah, and the church needs to stand up and talk about it, teach about it, make aware about it. Was Celebrate Recovery a big part of your recovery? I
Celebrate
love
Recovery has
Celebrate
been,
Recovery.
it's been Living Free and Celebrate Recovery are both big parts of my recovery. Substance abuse was never a big problem for me. My problem was sexual addiction, and codependency. Those are two, as you can imagine, two big areas because they were just so warped in my mind. So they were, so I love Celebrate Recovery. Yes.
So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, fireborn.org is the best way.
Yes. That's the best way.
Get on there tonight and look up the webpage, find out more about Anne Marie and everything that she's doing. Anne Marie, thank you for being with us tonight. I'd love to have you on
Thank you.
again. We can do another a whole segment and to go in a little bit deeper and find out more about what you're doing and how you're trying to
Yeah.
help people and going out in the field and taking all of these pills. And then waking up
Yeah.
looking at the sky and all this unbelievable. The book is when the books come out for sure. I want to know about that. But I'd love to connect more
Wonderful.
with you and your husband and see what we can do to help end this and then help the people that are still dealing with this. If
I would love that.
in the last minute, if somebody's watching right now and they said, I've never told anybody, I'm scared. What do I do?
Yeah.
What they're looking at you right through the eyes right now of the camera. What would you tell them that they need to do tonight?
I think start realizing for me, and this I wouldn't ever tell somebody that they what I did works for them, but starting to put that out for themselves, whether that safe space is on paper or I like to audio video not video but audible record myself, like speak to myself. I talk to little Annie a lot, and like I know that happened, so just walking through those motions of acknowledging what you know happened is the first step, and then trying to find somebody safe to share that with, whether that be a friend, a therapist, a medical provider, pastor. I think that there are many out there, and I know that there is at least one out there that God has planned for you to share that with. And as Dr. Williams has shared, I would love to be a sounding board for anyone out there that just wants to talk. I'm available. You can find me on social media. You can find me through the Fireborn website, and it's my greatest pleasure to meet people and to walk things out together.
It's going to amaze you in heaven when God says, hey, look behind you. Look at all the lives that you touched. And you fit the shoes of your purpose. And thank you for being here tonight and sharing. And I'd love to have you
Thank
back.
you. Thank you so much. It's been a
Okay,
pleasure.
Anne Marie, thank you for being with us. God bless you and your work
Bless
and
you.
your husband. God bless. As we do each and every week on this Super Bowl night. But let me be honest with you, Super Bowl is going to happen again next year. It's going to happen again next year. It's not about the Super Bowl. It's about life. Life. How do we deal with what we've been handed and dealt? That the devil thinks he has us and he doesn't. The grace of God, the love of God, the mercy of God, no matter what you've gone through, no matter what you're in the middle of right now, we always end with this line. There's always hope. There is always hope. Never give up on that. Join us right here next week for another edition live from Houston, Texas of Breaking the Silence. God bless you. Have an awesome, awesome week. Fireborn.org. God bless. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.